Thank you. Well, there's a certain element of short but sweet in what I have to say. It may be sweet for some people, but not for others. It's sweet for me because it's the truth, and it's the truth which is generally not recognized at all, and therefore the truth that is not recognized at all is inherently the most beautiful of them all. We're in a situation now where, in point of fact, especially in the Americas and in the Europe and Africa, for example, mankind is in the greatest danger of virtual extinction of the species ever known to us in historical accounts. There may have been prehistorical periods which are legendary, shall we say, as opposed to historical. But never before, since those historical times, of prehistorical times, has mankind ever faced a danger to the human species as great as the world as a whole faces today. The center of that thing, that problem, lies between Europe and North America. All the other regions of the country, of the countries of all the nations, are simply secondary. They are not the principal drivers, do they provide the solution for the situation. What the key to understanding this is to shock a number of you, especially those who are European by profession, as to what the situation is today. Everybody knows, I think, in Europe and beyond, that we have a great hyperinflationary financial crisis, and that populations are being starved, and probably starved to death in great numbers in various parts of this part of the world. And they're doomed unless the solution to this problem is identified and understood. Mankind is on the verge of a quasi-extinction. This is not something down the line. This is something in the immediate future. It's a problem which must be identified now correctly. It's a problem which is not understood in most any part of Europe, is little understood in the United States, though in the United States we have a better understanding of it than anyone else does. This system is about to go into a collapse. Now, there's an intention behind this. The intention has been bespoken by the Queen of England, who considers herself the Empress of the world, and to a large degree she is. Europe, for example, Europe is nothing, Western and Central Europe are nothing but puppets of the British Empire. You don't have nation states anymore. You don't have sovereignty anymore. You have a system. And the system is run essentially from London. And if this system continues and is not defeated, the power of the British Empire over Europe, or most of Europe, most of Western and Central Europe, the power over the United States right now, means that the doom that is threatened, it seems to be almost inevitable. The hyperinflation which has struck Europe and the United States simultaneously in particular, it's a doomsday sign. And the rate of production of necessities is falling, and is falling at an accelerating rate, and will continue to fall at an accelerating rate if as long as this transatlantic system of power continues. And no one in Europe has a chance now of doing much about it, because they're all tied in so heavily to the so-called Euro system. The Euro system is a mass suicide system of the unwilling. Now, what's the solution here? What's wrong? Why is this hyperinflation? And this is a hyperinflation that makes what happened in Germany in 19, 23 simple problem. This is the virtual extinction. Now, the British Empress, the Queen of England, has specified, as we had this series of discussions involving Copenhagen at one point, and it was shifted from there, and the British Queen went off in a different direction. She now has gone with a program of explicit genocide, mass genocide. Specifically, she does that not on one occasion, she said it repeatedly. She emphasizes it today. It's the policy of the President of the United States today. It's a policy of genocide against the transatlantic population in particular. And it's a very efficient genocide. If not stopped, it will kill. What her goals are, the immediate prospect is to reduce the world's population from 7 billion people to somewhat in the order of magnitude of 1.2 billion people. That's her policy. That policy is being implemented throughout Europe, especially Western and Central Europe. That policy is being implemented inside the United States itself. A policy of deliberate genocide has been specified by the Queen of England, and her puppet, the President of the United States, is now declared his support of that policy. We're going to have the greatest rate of accelerated death in the United States coming on if this president remains president. The policy is not his, the policy is hers. She bought and paid for him with drug money, a vast flood of drug money which was used to secure his election as President of the United States. He carried out that kind of program all the way through. He carried it out in the form of warfare. What happened in Libya, what is spreading into Syria, what is threatening throughout all of Africa, what is going on in the Middle East, what the threats are to Russia, all these things, the threats to China now. All these things are being done by her, chiefly through her instrument, the current President of the United States, who's nothing but her stooge for her. That's what we face. Now, how do we deal with this? They have an argument. The argument is, we've got a money problem. And we've got to solve the money problem. We've got to be nice to money, even if it means being mean to people, even if it means killing them. And that is exactly what the policy is of the current President of the United States. He hasn't gotten it voted up yet. But that's his policy. That's his intention. His intention is genocide against the major part of the population of the people of the United States, as well of Europe. So unless we can solve this little mystery of what's the money game, then we're not going to solve the problem. So therefore, I come to that particular point. What is the problem? Why are Europeans so stupid as to put up with this? Why are European governments more stupid than the people, of course? Naturally, they're more stupid. That's how they got to be governments. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been allowed into government if they had been stupid, malleable. But there's only one solution, and that solution is Glass-Steagall. But most people don't know what Glass-Steagall is. They think it's a new kind of adjustment system. No. Glass-Steagall is the fundamental law of the United States. Glass-Steagall is a name given to that law at a specific time in history. It was what was not just the United States, it was the forerunners of the United States. This is something that comes out of Nicholas of Cusa, for example, and his great influence and in the great scientific development which occurred, which was then destroyed largely by periods of great warfare in Europe in particular, civil war. And so they got, again, we took some people out of Columbus's estate. And Columbus was a follower of Nicholas of Cusa. and said the solution is to leave Europe and go across the oceans to the people of other parts of the world and build up a civilization, a global human civilization, which will make it possible for all parts of humanity to enjoy what human beings are and should be allowed to be. We had religious war. What did this lead to? Well, Columbus's expedition didn't work out too well. The original Columbia settlement, the middle of Mexico settlement, these things worked out fairly well, but they were destroyed under the influence of the oligarchical system. So then you had this thing that came from among a few Dutch, a few French, a few Brit, Irish, so forth. And they came over across the water into the North American continent, as well as the South American continent. And in the United States in particular, we made two efforts to solve the problem that Europe faced as a result of this situation. So they said, let's leave Europe. Let's get some people out of Europe. Because it is impossible to solve this problem in Europe. And it never has been solved. It just vibrated back and forth. Some progress was made. But things became weaker and weaker and weaker. Oh, we had something that worked out in Massachusetts finally. In that century. The Massachusetts Bay Colony. Now, the Massachusetts Bay Colony was an act of genius. It created the economic system on which the United States is based. Now, the Massachusetts Bay Colony was crushed by the Venetian Party, so-called. It was the same Venetian Party that destroyed the independence of the Britons and made them slaves of the new Venetian slavery system. And so the new slavery system came into North America, into Massachusetts, where we had the first economic system on which the United States was based. But being crushed, we then got into a war with Britain, which had been taken over by the new Venetian Party. And Britain had become an empire during the middle of that century. At that point, in the middle of the century, the people in North America, including some of my ancestors, had set forth on a new system of economy, a revival of the same system as the Massachusetts Bay Colony's system. And it worked. And there was one man who actually figured out how to make the principle work. And he was, of course, Alexander Hamilton, whose brain designed the American system and designed the only competent system that solves this kind of problem. Then the effort was made, it was succeeded. But then we were crushed. The British in particular were constantly trying to get us to crush our new republic. We had a few great leaders in these republics, the initial leaders in this republic. Then we had another group. So then they were crushed in turn. We were crushed again. We were crushed by the British intervention in what was called the Civil War of the United States. We came out of that successfully. But then we were betrayed again by British intervention, British imperial intervention. And then we got our power back. And then some damn fool in the United States decided to go join and support the British in a war called World War I. The most stupid thing that was ever done. And so we came out of that war successfully under Franklin Roosevelt, who represented the same policy as Alexander Hamilton did, in defining the economic policy, the founding constitutional principle of the United States. And Franklin Roosevelt understood that policy and put a version of it through. And it worked. We won the war. unfortunately, Franklin Roosevelt died. He died. Why did he die? Because the British killed him. How do they kill him? Well, the British kept throwing, we were fighting this war, World War II as it was called, and Roosevelt was the leader of the nation. He was the world leader of all the international effort to save civilization. But then Churchill had a cute idea. Let's not win the war too soon. That was the British policy. Let's not win the war too soon. Let's wait until Roosevelt is dead. Let's wait until Franklin Roosevelt is dead. Then when they saw that Franklin Roosevelt was about to go dead, and this is a matter of eyewitness, not minor eyewitness knowledge on some of this stuff, then they went and ended the war after Roosevelt had died. They wore him out with the illness he'd gone through. They wore him out deliberately. And Churchill did it deliberately. He prolonged the war in Europe to prevent United States from going back to the policies of Franklin Roosevelt and the commitments that Roosevelt had made to the peace. The entire peace policy of Franklin Roosevelt was obliterated under the direction of Winston Churchill and that sort of process. Well, then we were in trouble. Harry Truman, the president who replaced President Roosevelt, was a bum, a Wall Street bum, and a whore for the British Empire. There are lots of those kinds of things loose. So then we had got that straightened out. We went through a process of fighting back against what Churchill had done and others had done, similar people. They started thermonuclear war. Nuclear war was started by whom? Started by the British Empire, not the United States. We had weapons, yes. We had nuclear arsenals, yes. Britain had a nuclear arsenal given to them by us. But it was not to be used. It was not to be used unless there was a pretext for using it, a real pretext, a real need to use it. They did not want to unleash what nuclear weapons meant as a weapon of warfare. They were willing to have the weapons, but don't use them. Don't utilize them as a policy. Don't try to get into a war by using nuclear weapons. Do anything possible to avoid having to use nuclear weapons. And it wasn't really, nuclear weapons was not the purpose. Nuclear weapons was a variety of something else. Nuclear weapons were a reflection of nuclear power. Well, people like Einstein and Max Planck in the 1890s had already envisaged the basis for nuclear power. And it's a natural thing for mankind to use nuclear power. It's an unnatural thing not to use nuclear power. It's an insane thing not to have nuclear power. Because the continued existence of man in the face of the threat from inside the solar system, from asteroids and other devices in the system, which are now becoming an increasing threat and source of threats. That'll be reported to you elsewhere later today. There was never a purpose for nuclear weapons. The point was that the Nazis had even thought about using nuclear weapons. Hitler had killed it at that point. But the intent was not to, the intention of the nuclear policy did not come from a nuclear weapons policy. It came from the need for progress of man's condition, for increasing the productive powers of mankind, for raising the standard of living of mankind, for increasing the density of power per capita, and per unit of territory. We are now going to be going to thermonuclear power, not as thermonuclear weapons. We're going to thermonuclear power in order to get to Mars faster, because without thermonuclear fusion, you cannot get to Mars conveniently. Mankind will never get to Mars, to live on Mars, without thermonuclear fusion as a power source. We will never be able to deal with the threats to mankind from asteroids and things like that unless we bring those means to practice, not for warfare, but for the development of man's role inside the solar system, at least in the inner side of the man's solar system. That's our nuclear policy. All right, now how does all this work with the economy? Well, what we are proposing and what we are working for, I'll just give you a brief background. We had an organization inside the United States which had a branch in it of our organization which involved younger people. I positioned myself in the recent years to take this younger group of young people, young adults, and to build an organization within our existing organization which would be the pot of growth in our future role in politics. Then, during last year, during the summer and early autumn, as we went, I just said at one point, look, what we've got to do, we've got to shut down everything else we're doing in order to take the core of our organization and get into Washington, D.C. in the period of this election campaign and sit on that whole pile of people, of members of Congress and similar kinds of people. And let's get our policy put through by let's educate the Congress. And that's what we did. Now today we have reached a point where we do have a significant influence far greater than anything we had before in terms of the United States. And the core of what we are proposing is Glass-Steagall. Simply, the Glass-Steagall policy, if applied, will save the United States. If Europeans wish to survive, they will do the same thing. They will take a carbon copy of Glass-Steagall and bring it into Europe immediately and eliminate any other variety of economic policy system. And that's what's needed. What people don't understand in all of this, what Europeans don't understand, they don't understand what economy is all about. That is actual physical economy, human economy. And we can learn a lesson from the animal kingdom. Because the animal kingdom evolves. Evolution is the natural state of living processes. It's, as far as we know, the general trend of all all living processes is based on evolution. Evolution to higher energy flux density forms of existence. And every bit of progress in mankind's status has always been a result of the utilization of the recognition of this principle. Now, in the animal kingdom, the animals that aren't so efficient die. They go extinct. The same thing is true of nations. Nations that don't progress die. They go extinct. Europe is going extinct. The United States has also joined the self-extinction club under the past two presidents, under the banning of Glass-Steagall. And therefore, what's happening in Europe in not considering Glass-Steagall or not applying it. What's happening in the United States, even though we have a better knowledge of Glass-Steagall and we have much more support for Glass-Steagall, but even in Europe, independent Europe thinkers are thinking in terms of Glass-Steagall as an economic reform. Even many people in England, in the British system who are bankers, were saying we must go to Glass-Steagall. They knew, in fact, that it wouldn't, that nothing else would work except Glass-Steagall. Without Glass-Steagall, right now, civilization is dead. It cannot survive. But why does all this mean? I said, first of all, take two things. One, all life is based on an evolutionary process under which species go from lower qualities of development to higher. That's the animal kingdom. That's the law of evolution. Now, mankind is different than all other kinds of animals because mankind has the power to evolve voluntarily. Mankind evolves voluntarily not by changing its biology, but by changing its mind. And the utilization of the noetic powers of mind, and no animal species has really noetic powers of mind. Only human beings have noetic powers of mind. And therefore, the object is always to go to higher levels of technology, which means kill off the green policy. If you want to survive, end the green policy. Because that's a death sentence. It's a suicide pact. Mankind must always progress. We must always learn from the animals and apply the principles the animals don't know how to do. Rise to a higher energy flux density. And how do you do that? You make physical discoveries. You go from lower forms of energy flux density to higher forms of energy flux density. You find new applications. Now mankind is, for the moment, helpless against the asteroids which are arrayed against us inside the solar system. We're helpless against the comets. We saw recently in Russia, you saw some quickie comets shooting through there. If they'd had a little more energy flux density in that territory, you wouldn't have had, say, a large number of people injured. You would have had mass deaths. Mankind is faced with mass death. If we fail to progress adequately and rapidly enough in order to defeat the problems. Now, in the United States and in Europe, you have a common suicide pact. Is called the Green Policy, which is a species suicide pact. It's mass death without increase of the energy flux density expressed in terms of technology and pure power as such. There's no future for mankind on this planet. Now, what's this economic problem, then, which is what all my talking about here is about? Unless we go to the equivalent of a Glass-Steagall policy, is to say a policy is to increase the energy flux density represented by application to man's benefit. At the same time, this is reflected in another way. Again, we can learn from the animal species. Progress, evolve, or die. Progress, evolve, or go extinct. That's the law. That's the law of nature. Mankind is the only creature which does it voluntarily and can do it voluntarily, and that is by making discoveries with the mind, with the powers of the mind, to discover new principles, higher principles of development. Nobody but mankind is known to be able to do that voluntarily. And people who decide to give up that voluntary right, that voluntary capability, are committing their own mass suicide. In great nations, as Nicholas of Cusa expresses this clearly in his work, his totality of his work and his influence. He was the engineer of science. He was the engineer of progress. He was the salvation of Europe from what had been the misery and horrible conditions of the earlier centuries. And therefore, this is a moral question. But what's our economic system? Why is our economic system such a genius as opposed to the poor Europeans who don't understand this yet? What is the principle? The principle of progress? The principle of going to higher energy flux density, to higher standards of productivity, to be able to defend Earth and the people on it from the kinds of things that threaten Earth now and threaten the people of Earth now. How do we do that? Well, it goes back to the American system. The American system is progress, 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 as expressed in the currency of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. Again, that's the beginning of it. We were crushed. We went back to the same thing. We had a genius among us, who, Alexander Hamilton, who made it clear how the United States economic system could be made to work. And because we existed, even as we existed as a relatively weak power inside the Americas, the fact that we were promoting, as Benjamin Franklin had done, as his predecessors in Massachusetts had done, they based themselves on a policy of progress, of scientific progress, and an understanding that scientific progress is based on increasing the productive powers of labor, which means such things as just plain innovation or scientific discovery. And we actually drove Europe into progress. Our existence forced Europe, it forced even the British, to reckon with progress. That the basis of money, as such, is not the basis of economy. It's the basis of productivity, of increase of the energy flux density, or increase of the productivity of production in general. The problem is, what are the other systems? You have the monetary system, the pure monetary system, the currency system. What's wrong with that? Well, the common currency system has no built-in feature of a drive for progress. Therefore, a gold currency, is not the basis for progress. A silver currency, a monetary system, is not a basis for progress. The basis of progress is increase of the manifest benefits of the productive powers of labor, so that every time that you're acting and producing, you are producing at a higher level than you were producing the day before. You do that in classical music. You do that in classical drama. You do that in everything that man does that's good. And therefore, our currency, our system, the American constitutional system, is based uniquely on the concept associated with Alexander Hamilton. We have never achieved anything of notability as a nation in the United States except on the basis of the application of Hamilton's principle. And if you base yourself on a monetary system, a pure monetary system, you are not requiring progress. You're not requiring physical and technological progress. So how can mankind survive if we don't progress? If we just wear ourselves out and, like animals, die because they become antiquated. So therefore, our system is based on a credit system. The same system that was used in the United States by our greatest early presidents and their associates. It's the great things that were driven by the science driver program in Europe the pressure of the American Revolution forced more attention to this because nations were competing. If they wanted to compete in Europe, they had to do something about catching up with each other and trying to overtake and catch up each other, to do something better than the next guy. And it came to the idea that the system of investment into our system, when it's applied, is we always increase the productive powers of labor. And we recognize that to do that, you have to increase the productivity potential of the population. You have to go to higher technologies. Always, always, always higher technologies. Master territories that before you couldn't inhabit. Conquer things that frighten you. And the next phase we're at now, as you will hear from another source here today, now the concentration is on going to energy flux density and things of that nature. It means now getting out there in the solar system, out to our neighbors in the solar system, and beginning to get the power through scientific discovery and scientific development to get out there and control the threats to mankind which are represented by these flying rocks out there, of which there are millions of them out there between the Venusian and the Mars vicinity. They're out there waiting to destroy us. The intensity of these rocks coming through is higher. One of our people have noted that today, if we were going to be hit by an asteroid which were big enough and fast enough to destroy human life on Earth, there's not a damned thing we could do about it within a year. We are going to have, if our mankind's survival is going to depend upon going out and developing systems of defense against these kinds of threats, and going out and reaching further and further, so that the ability to defend the existence of the human species is made possible. We cannot do that without thermonuclear fusion as a standard of productivity for mankind in the future. And so that's the principle is simple. The principle of the United States, progress. The principle of Nicolas Sarkozy, progress. The principle of Charlemagne, progress. Charlemagne understood a better economy than anybody in Europe today does. It's true. He actually calculated. He had a whole census. Examined the whole reign that he dominated during the period of his lifetime. He united the water systems that were still being done in Germany back in the 1990s, in the final stages. He found out how much people had to eat, how much it cost to build a great system, which broke down after he was out. They went back in history, went back to an earlier form. But always is this, the principle of progress, that man has a duty of progress, has it had it all along. But now we've come to a time where we're now not looking out at the solar system as a passive thing, noting stars and so forth. We're now seeing new kinds of problems. And the thing that threatens mankind now that really should frighten everyone, frighten us into doing something good about it, is to increase technology, the energy flux density of technology. Reverse the green policy, which is our suicide pact in Europe and part of the United States. A green policy is a policy of human mass death. Because without progress, the conditions of life by which man is able to continue life, human life, on this planet, cannot do it. And right now, the landmark of that at this stage, right now, lies in dealing with the threats of those asteroids out there. What once I used to call it the Strategic Defense Initiative, when I pushed that policy and we got a lot of people to accept it. and Russia as well, or the Soviet Union as well. And the similar kinds of things, these kinds of inventions, these kinds of discoveries of principle, which depend upon mankind must always become better than himself. Whoever you are, whatever you represent, you must become better than yourself. And you can hold out now today. Today we have a solar system. And the solar system is a nice thing to have. We can use it. But also a solar system is something which can kill you. And you better learn how to use that. And that's my point. Just the whole point of the U.S. system, the system which we're trying to revive as the Glass-Steagall system today, is the only system which provides for a survival of civilization. So let's jump all those things that people have as cheap shot successes. There's only one thing that will save mankind. Increase the productive powers of labor. And don't stick to stagnant old ideas. There are new threats and new opportunities and new happinesses out there waiting to be seized. People have to know they exist, and then they have to choose to accept them.